The World Cup is just days away at this point, and if you find yourself thinking, man, I've been slacking, I would love to have a look at every team playing in this tournament, then this is the video for you. Every team from groups A through F, 24 teams, and then we'll have the rest in another video. So yes, guys, this is more of a quick glance at every team so that you know the lay of the land for each group and have a general idea of how teams got here, their coach, who to watch out for, etc. I'll have predictions in a separate video going up against a supercomputer, which, by the way, make sure to subscribe and turn on your notifications for the World Cup videos that are going to be coming out every day when the tournament gets going. Okay, we have a lot to get through, so let's go. No better place to start than in Group A, the group that hosts Mexico are in alongside South Korea, South Africa, and South Czechia, just Czechia, where all matches will be played south of the American border, except for one, Czechia, just Czechia, remember, versus South Africa, will be played in Atlanta. So if you're Mexico or anyone in this group, really, you're happy with the draw. No layups, but no team that really stands head and shoulders above the rest either. When it comes to Mexico, you'd back them to make it out of this group, right? And maybe even finish in first, as Mexico with the home advantage is nothing to mess with. You've seen how Mexican supporters travel for their team at other World Cups, the noise they make. This will be tenfold for having Javier Aguirre's squad, and in absence of a qualification campaign to look to, this Mexican team is 1 year off of winning the Gold Cup in the final against the USA. Not only that, but under Aguirre, and by the way, this is Aguirre's third time coaching Mexico, they won the CONCACAF Nations League as well. They look more settled off of the pitch, which leads to more stability on it, better organized, more unified. Absolutely a dip in form at the end of 25, win this in six matches, but they bounce back with draws against Portugal and Belgium in March, and that was with depleted squads as well. Because injuries have hit pretty hard. For example, you have first choice goalkeeper Luis Malagón is out with a ruptured Achilles, but Memo Ochoa, Mr. World Cup, is in the squad. Midfield anchor Marcel Ruiz has torn his ACL, he's out. Captain Edson Alvarez is recovering from ankle surgery, but he's in the squad. Also, watch out for Gilberto Mora, he's 17, tons of hype, and could break Mexico's record for their youngest ever player at the World Cup. In the attack, Raul Jimenez showed how important he still can be last season, and they'll need him again, as Santi Jimenez's form has been poor of late, but another guy to watch out for, Julian Quiñones, he scored a ton of goals for El Cadzia this season. Mexico's two best performances have been when they hosted the World Cup the previous two times, so maybe this time they'll have a really good showing once again. It has been 20 years now since Czechia have played at a World Cup, and they really, really had to earn their place at this tournament. They finished behind Croatia in qualifying and had to endure back-to-back shootouts over Ireland and Denmark in order to make this World Cup. They are coached by 74-year-old Miroslav Kubek, and he improved their defense greatly since taking over in late 2025 for the playoffs. They're better organized, hard to break down in their disciplined 4-2-3-1, and pick their moments to get forward with Patrick Schick as the main man in the attack, and one of a handful of players who play abroad, with much of this squad actually playing within the Czech First League. Kubek has only overseen two competitive matches, that must be noted, but hey, he got him here. When you look at their 18 goals scored in qualifying, it must be noted also that 10 of those were against Gibraltar, as Czechia had difficulty scoring from open play. Set pieces wasn't a problem though, as they led Europe with 8 goals from dead ball situations. Ladislav Krejci is a big threat there. Both Schick and Susek are over 1.9 meters or 6'2" tall as well, so they have options. If Czechia can avoid defeat against South Korea in their opening match, then there is hope for this big defensive physical team to advance. Speaking of South Korea, this is their 11th consecutive World Cup appearance. That's a record amongst Asian nations. Nobody else has touched that. They went unbeaten in their final round of World Cup qualifying, sealing their spot with a 2-0 win away to Iraq. For the first time since 2018, South Korea have a South Korean coach again. Hong Myung-bo took over in July of 2024, and while qualifying was great, his recent switch to a back three in friendly losses against the Ivory Coast and Austria has caused some concern and debate among South Korean supporters. This is his second stint coaching the team, and he has quite the history of playing at the World Cup. As a player, he went to 4 World Cups, including that 2002 run. Say what you will about that run. And as a coach, he oversaw their group stage exit at the 2014 World Cup. So not something to remember. But there's certainly talent in this team. We all know Son Heung-min, an absolute icon of South Korean, of Asian football even. One of the best to ever do it. What a player. Lee Kang-in is hot off of winning the Champions League once again. He's fresh. Only 1,800 minutes played for PSG this season. And of course, Kim Min-jae marshalling that back line. They're going to sit in a mid-block, stay disciplined and compact, and hit you on the counter with their speed in the wide areas. They also have had a knack for getting late wins in the last couple of World Cups. Just look at their win over Portugal, 91st minute. Or their win over Germany in 2018, 93rd minute winner. Not bad opponents to get those victories over either. And finally, South Africa. The Bafana Bafana are back for the first time since hosting the World Cup in 2010. Funnily enough, they're playing the tournament opener against Mexico, just as they hosted Mexico for the opener in 2010. And the last time that they had actually qualified for a World Cup, 2002, 24 years ago. So this has been a long time coming. And as you guys may know, I have a soft spot for South Africa. I really want to see them do well. I do. They, of course, had a bit of a blunder in qualification, fielding an ineligible player in their match against Lesotho, which flipped their 2-0 win into a 3-0 loss. That could have derailed things, but Hugo Bruce, their Belgian head coach, organized South Africa brilliantly, and they managed to hold Nigeria to two draws along the way as they topped their qualifying group still. Take the points away, they still got it done. Bruce has done an excellent job in rebuilding South Africa. He is a pragmatist who likes to have a solid defensive base and then utilize this very talented South African generation's speed in transition to punish opponents. Funnily enough, Bruce played in the World Cup in Mexico 40 years ago, where his team, Belgium, lost to Maradona and Argentina in the semi-finals. 40 years later, he's coaching at the World Cup in Mexico. His final coaching contribution, by the way, as he's retiring after this tournament. Lyle Foster is a player you could watch out for, a modern physical forward that brings an aerial threat, but also links up well with his teammates. Goals have actually kind of been a weakness, which is not what you want to hear about a striker, but he could do a Giroud type thing. But Reyners is back in the team as well, which provides a tactical variation for Bruce in the attack. Now, what does the predictor say as far as the probability for each team to advance, whether in first, second, or third? Tell us, supercomputer. Well, with that home advantage, Mexico is given an 89.1% chance to qualify, about 73% for Czechia, but South Korea is close at 68.8%. South Africa, just under 50-50 shot, according to the supercomputer. Okay, over to Group B, Canada, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Qatar, and probably the strongest side in Switzerland, who are the favorites to top the group. Spoiler, pull up the numbers later. But in fact, let's just start with Switzerland, as they had a poor 2022 World Cup. Portugal smashed them in the round of 16. Gonzalo Ramos hat-trick in that 6-1 loss for Switzerland. But this is their sixth World Cup, their sixth consecutive World Cup, as they have become quite the consistent force in UEFA. They, to me, are the perfect example of a team that's not in the elites, but is absolutely capable of messing up the elites' day, as they did to France in Euro 2020. Italy, well, Italy isn't an elite football side anymore, but they beat them in Euro 2024 as well. They had a straightforward qualification where they topped the group, were unbeaten, and conceded just 2 goals in 6 matches. Their defense was second only to England, who didn't concede a single goal in qualifying. And of the 14 goals that Switzerland scored, they really spread them out. 8 different scorers amongst them. There will be no Shaqiri banger at this tournament, unfortunately. We will miss him, as he and Sommer have retired. But Xhaka is just as relevant as ever and is at the heart of this Switzerland side, dictating the tempo, winning the ball, threading passes into dangerous passing lanes. He showed he can still hang in the Premier League, helping Sunderland to a great final position. Yakin has a strong system first side that are hard to break down, really hard, and are a threat in transition. That's common in international football, where it's more difficult to instill an identity given the short amount of time together, an attacking identity, that is. And now the hosts of the 2022 World Cup and the current back-to-back champions of Asia, Qatar. Julen Lopetegui's side had a pretty bumpy ride through qualification, as they actually finished in fourth in the third round of qualifying and had to go into a group with Oman and UAE, of which they topped that group to qualify. Now, the star of Qatar is still Al-Muez Ali, of whom you probably remember that name from a few years ago, or of course, if you follow Asian football, you'll know it well. However, he did kind of ghost against top opposition in 2022. He barely touched the ball against Ecuador and Netherlands, but he did lead Asian qualifying with 12 goals. He still got it. And his teammate, Akram Afif, had 11 assists. They're the dynamic duo for Qatar. Lopetegui likes his teams to keep possession in a 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 shape, but we'll see how often they get to do that in this group, which isn't overwhelming for them, but will definitely be a challenge in every single match. But having managed West Ham and Wolves, teams who don't necessarily dominate the ball, he has certainly learned how to play without the ball as well. He'll just need Ali to be incredibly efficient with the chances that they do manage to create, such as against Canada, one of the hosts of this tournament, of course, but man, as a Canadian, it sucks to see the injuries this team has picked up. We are dealing with currently, or dealt with in the past few months, injuries to Eustachio, Priso, Schaffelberg, Ahmed, Jones, Johnston, Bombito, Promise David, Alfonso Davies, and just recently Marcelo Flores ruptured his ACL in the CONCACAF Champions League final. So some guys just returning from injuries or returned a few months ago and may not be at their best or yet to return in some cases. That said, with Jesse Marsh in charge, there's a bit more belief. Look at what he did with Canada at the Copa America, making it all the way to the semifinals, which is not bad. Our strikers come into this out of form or off of a big injury, some of them at least. David never settled at Juve. Laren scored now and then for Southampton. Promise David was injured in February and only just made it back, but he did look sharp against Uzbekistan, as did Alouseyi. But again, it's more about the system. It's more about Marsh's approach and his man management. Canada press high, they run tirelessly, and transition to attack quickly when they are pinned back. We'll see how the defense looks. Bombito says he'll be ready. He did play against Uzbekistan. Really interested to see how Canada does, as we lost two of the last 11 matches at the time of recording this, one being in a shootout and held Ecuador, Colombia, Iceland, and Tunisia to draws, beat Wales, Romania, Venezuela, Guatemala, and Uzbekistan. So we'll see, you know? Also, how much will Alfonso Davies play, and will he be a winger? Most likely to the latter, as far as being a winger. And finally, Bosnia and Herzegovina, who will play against Canada in the group opener. They really went through it to qualify for this World Cup. Their first since 2014, after plenty of playoff heartbreaks, but they got it over the line now. This time they had playoff euphoria, as they had to overcome Wales on penalties in Cardiff and then beat Italy on penalties to return to the World Cup. Under Sergei Barbarez, who is a first-time manager, he's turned Bosnia into a tough team to play against. They sit deep, they defend compactly, direct play to their target men, work tirelessly, and never say die. They averaged just 44% possession under Barbarez and scored 7 goals after the 70th minute in qualifying, so they've got that grit. Edin Dzeko is still the icon, an absolute legend in Bosnian football, and still capable of being effective at 40 years of age. He scored 6 goals in qualifying, including an 86th minute equalizer against Wales to send the match to extra time. But there's also Demirovic, Tabakovic, the young Bayraktarević, who scored the winning penalty to qualify. Bosnia will be a really tough side to play against for Canada and Qatar, and hey, even Switzerland too. They don't make it easy for anyone. Some of their names are also difficult to pronounce. So what does the predictor say for the chance to advance for everyone in this group? Switzerland predictably lead with 92%, Canada close behind with 89%, I'll take that, 68.5% for Bosnia, and Qatar at 20.8%. Ooh, here we go, a group that a lot of people are looking forward to, myself included. Group C has Haiti, Scotland, Morocco, and Brazil. What's not to like here, right? Let's start with Haiti, and they are one of the teams that I, of course, did a deep dive on, where I went into the history of football in the country. It's a history video and a football video mixed into one, so definitely check that out if you haven't already. But they come into this, their second World Cup, actually, as they also took part in 1974's World Cup, and ended Dinozov's long-running streak of not conceding a goal. Unreal stuff from them. Just as it's unreal that they haven't played a match in Haiti for 4 years now, and yet they still found a way to qualify 52 years after their first World Cup. Their coach, Sebastien Migné, has never set foot in Haiti, but he guided them through a campaign that saw them top their group ahead of Honduras, and they have lost just 4 of 15 competitive matches under the French coach. Wilson Isidore committed to Haiti earlier this year. He of Sunderland, of course, and he he scored in just his second cap, a great alternative to or a partner to Dawkins Nazon. You can expect them to try to defend deep, expect Isidore and everyone else to work hard without the ball, expect Placide to be a busy man in goal, their captain and amongst their most capped players. Yeah, it's going to be tough, but they're used to that, aren't they? Scotland versus Haiti. Actually, just saw a headline that this match just had a price reduction for their tickets, so jump all over that if you live in the Foxborough area. Mind you, I think it only was reduced to about $400 for the cheap tickets, which is crazy. Anyway, Scotland are appearing in the World... By the way, that's crazy for anyone. But Scotland are appearing in the World Cup for the ninth time and are looking to exorcise some demons. The Tartan Army haven't made it out of the group stage, not once. They last played in a World Cup in 1998, but hey, they could make it out in third or second. Who knows what can happen? Their qualifying campaign was a thriller, as their pivotal match against Denmark was a thriller. They won 4-2 at Hampden Park. You had Scott McTominay scoring a bicycle kick, casual. You had Kenny McLean's winning goal that was hit from the other side of the world, and a Tierney absolute beauty just to top it all off. Steve Clarke is now the longest serving manager in Scottish national team history, and under him, and in thanks part to the attacking talents he has, such as McTominay and McGinn, Scotland averaged 2.2 goals, which was simply unthinkable for them in the past. Speaking of Scott, he's the star coming off of another good season personally for Napoli, where he has developed into a fantastic player that can genuinely define matches with some of his brilliance. You also have Robertson, the aforementioned McGinn, a bit on the older side, not a forward under 30 in this squad. Morocco will be looking to repeat history, the current champions of Africa, I think. I mean, that's what CAF says. They have a truly talented side regardless, and they are a team that you absolutely take lightly at your own peril. That's what happened to, perhaps, to Spain and Portugal in 2022, when Morocco made history by becoming the first African side to reach the World Cup semi-finals. Now, after a strong qualification campaign and the AFCON result, whatever that was, they are ranked 8th in the world, which goes to show how their results have been going for them. Now, 3 months before the World Cup is to kick off, their coach, Regragui, did step down, citing the pressure and public criticism that the coach of the Moroccan national team is subjected to, which can cause mental fatigue. In his place, Mohamed Ouabou, who won the U20 World Cup with Morocco in 2025, he has a good resume at the youth levels, but is kind of untested at the senior levels, at least in competitive matches, right? While they were built on the foundations of a strong defense during the last World Cup, they now have a stronger attack as well. Brahim Diaz and Ayoub El-Kabi are a big part of this, with El-Kabi averaging 1.69 goals per 90 minutes during qualifying. That said, they still had the best defense in qualifying with just 2 goals conceded. They will be a very strong team once again, the best in their group, that is. They opened their World Cup group stage against World Cup royalty, Brazil. Now coached by Carlo Ancelotti, they are the only team with 5 stars on their chest. They are now 24 years without one. Failure to win this summer would be their longest run ever without a World Cup victory. Qualifying wasn't really plain sailing. Under Dorival Jr., Brazil looked nothing like the Brazil we all think of in our heads. There were even moments during qualification where there was a question as to whether Brazil would qualify. Imagine that. Things were upside down. Their record of never losing a qualifier at home, gone. 3 managers in under 2 years, and then Ancelotti arrived. Someone who commands respect, who has a knack for bringing teams together, a knack for winning too. And in this tournament, Brazil looks very, very strong. Vinicius is showing some great form. Endrick had a fantastic spell at Lyon. Rafinha is back. Neymar for the vibes, and who knows, maybe some magic off of the bench if he ever heals. Casemiro coming off of a great season, as are Marquinhos and Gabriel, Alisson in goal. A really, really strong team. So while qualifying was a bit iffy, Ancelotti has changed this team already. And with that in mind, the predictor says Brazil have a 98.2% chance to advance. Wow. Morocco also incredibly likely at about 88%, 64.8% for Scotland, which is a welcome sight, I'm sure, and 14.5% for Haiti. Okay, Group D, where it's another very even group, very similar to Group A, and it also contains a host nation. USA, Turkey, Paraguay, Australia, everyone can beat everyone. So the USA, coached by Mauricio Pochettino, who has consistently been linked away from this job, they come into this tournament at an interesting point, right? Things started slowly with Poch. There was a definite dip in 2025, but things picked up towards the end of the year. A switch to a 3-4-3 helped, though they aren't married to that formation. They play potchball, you know, aggressive pressing, fast transitions, a lot of movement and fluidity in the attack. They have been hit or miss at times. They smashed Uruguay, not the real Uruguay, as they were missing everybody, but still 5-1 in a friendly, and then lost 5-2 to Belgium in a friendly. So while they are capable of great things going forward, there's still clearly issues at the back. I mean, Tim Ream at 38 is still part of the USA's back line, and without Chris Richards, they seem a bit light on quality in defense. At least they have very good options in the attack and midfield. For all of his struggles this season, Pulisic remains a top performer for the United States and can carry the attack if needed. Whereas Fuller and Balogun had a good 2026 with AS Monaco, he's carrying form into this tournament. McKennie, one of Juve's best players this past season, Tillman is quality, and someone like Zendejas has supporters excited with what he has done with Club America of late. Definitely watch out for him. I see him as a guy to cement his place in the 11 during this tournament. Paraguay, they actually had a friendly against the USA not so long ago and lost 2-1, but they haven't been on the up lately. Well, relative to how they were doing previously. Always had a bit of a soft spot for Paraguay, or at least I wish them well, thanks to Oscar Taquara Cardozo, absolute Benfica legend for me. Anyway, their transformation began in 2024 when Gustavo Alfaro took over. The professor, he inherited a disorganized, inconsistent Paraguay and rebuilt them to have discipline, play compact, and be insanely difficult to break down. That seems to be the key in international football, eh? If you're struggling, the antidote is kind of sorting out your defense. They started qualifying with just one win in their first 7 matches, but then Paraguay went unbeaten in 9 consecutive matches, beating the likes of Brazil, Uruguay, and Argentina along the way. They conceded just 10 goals in 18 matches, which was the second best defense in qualifying behind only Ecuador. Gustavo Gomez and Omar Alderete are at the heart of their defense. The attacking struggles comparatively, but Enciso and Sanabria are who you should watch out for in the attack. You know, this team is just down to grind results. All right. 6 consecutive World Cup appearances for Australia. They had a tough time getting to this one. Well, not intercontinental playoff tough, but still, you know, tough. They lost to Bahrain early in qualifying. Graham Arnold resigned, their longtime coach. Tony Popovich took over, and he steadied things for the Socceroos. Playing a defensive, high-intensity, high-pressing approach in a 3-4-2-1 shape, Australia won their final 4 qualifiers. That included a 1-0 win over Japan and a comeback win over Saudi Arabia to achieve direct qualification. That match against Japan had almost 70% possession, but they didn't have a single big chance against that Aussie defense. So they'll be looking to advance from the group stage again, just as they did last time. And remember how difficult they made life for Argentina? That match, you know, that got Jackson Irvine some notoriety. Casemiro knew exactly who he was when they met, thanks to that. And he will be the engine in the midfield, scrapping for every ball. Irankunda, the 20-year-old Wofford winger, is coming in as their most gifted attacker. Sutar as their most important defender in the qualification cycle. But watch out for Jordan Bosch to get forward down that left flank and create a lot of chances from the wing back position. And finally, we have Turkey. It's been 24 years since Turkey have been at the World Cup. 24! Unbelievable. Their stars, Arda Güler and Kenan Yıldız, weren't even born the last time Turkey took part, back when they finished 3rd. In Korea and Japan. These boys had to sweat to make it into this World Cup. They made it through via the playoffs and had a very nervy 1-0 win over Kosovo in Kosovo to secure their place. And if Turkey play anything like they did in Euro 2024, you can expect a very, very fun team to watch. They are better under Montella, controlling possession more, strong in the midfield, and the aforementioned Güler and Yıldız provide a huge threat in the attack. Güler, for me, I mean, if you've watched the channel for a while, you already know this, but he's one of the most special players to watch, in my opinion. So good on the ball, can place the ball on a dime from half the pitch away, has a wicked strike from distance as well. The strikers won't be starved of chances with him on the pitch, that's for sure. Yıldız, he provides a key to unlock tricky defenses as well with his 1v1 abilities that just gets better and better. The big concern, defense. They conceded 1.5 goals per game in qualifying. Now Spain ran the score up against them, that's true, but that could hold them back once they hit the knockout rounds. So in this group, the expectation is Turkey are seen as second best odds to advance with about 83% probability. The States top the charts with 3.5% more than Turkey, Paraguay at 60.3%, and Australia at 40.6%. Group E has Germany, Curaçao, Ivory Coast, and Ecuador, a tricky group to call. Well, parts of it are. It will be incredibly tricky for Curaçao, who are making their World Cup debut as the smallest nation to ever qualify for the World Cup and are the second lowest ranked nation taking part in the tournament. The Blue Wave made waves in qualifying as they have slowly built to this qualification, going unbeaten in their final 10 qualifying matches, of which manager Dick Advocaat called it the craziest thing in his 40-year career. Their World Cup clinching match was wild as well. They survived three shots off the woodwork and a 93rd minute penalty reversal away to Jamaica. Advocaat, by the way, resigned in February for family health reasons, but was reinstated recently. His team of players, who mostly are born in Europe, Netherlands, Belgium, etc., are led by Leandro Bacuna, the captain and former Aston Villa player. They'll try to defend for their lives and steal a goal on the counter or from set pieces. Regardless of what happens, their qualification was the big win for them. Ecuador, on the other hand, well, they also defend like they're paid per clean sheet, as these guys barely concede goals ever. In qualifying, they finished second to Argentina already. That's big news. And they did so while conceding 0.28 goals per game, 13 clean sheets. That is extraordinary. A big part of their strong defense is how Sebastián Bacasese organizes them, of course, but a lot of praise must go to Moises Caicedo, their midfield marshal. There's also Piero Hincapié of Arsenal, William Pacho of PSG, who had another ridiculous season. Pervis Estupiñán is back there as well, guys who are thriving at the highest levels in Europe. Well, Milan didn't exactly thrive this season, but you catch my meaning. However, if you are a lover of goals, skip Ecuador's matches completely. They don't concede many, and they don't score many either. Enner Valencia is still that guy at 35, and not many have come along to usurp him, which is an issue. They average less than a goal per game in qualifying, so while they are hard to beat, they also find it difficult to beat others. Truly a nightmare to play against, and sometimes a nightmare to watch as well. But we'll see how they do. Not a nightmare to watch, Ivory Coast. They missed out on both 2022 and 2018. The last time we saw them at the World Cup was in Brazil 2014, and they come in boasting some decent form. They won AFCON 2023 and made the quarterfinals of AFCON 2025. Not to mention, Amers Faye's transformation of this team has been remarkable. They didn't concede a single goal in qualifying across 10 matches. Ecuadorians are screaming hearing that. The jealousy. Evan Ndika is a big part of that defensive solidity, but the organized midfield ahead of him is a big part of their defensive structure, and Franck Kessier is the man pulling the strings there, directing traffic alongside Ibrahim Sangare. But the man you need to watch out for is the man that plenty of clubs are watching out for. You know, Liverpool, PSG, Bayern. 19-year-old RB Leipzig winger Yann Diomande. 12 goals and 7 Bundesliga assists. He is as pacey as they come, technically unbelievable, can create goals and opportunities from thin air. They also have Amad Diallo, though, no slouch himself, nor is Simon Adingra, so a great defense and a very strong attack for Ivory Coast as well. And finally, in Group E, we have Germany, and what to make of Germany. It's really wild to say that they have 4 World Cup titles. They've been on the World Cup podium 12 times and have also crashed out in the group stage in the past 2 World Cups, huh? Germany looked great under Julian Nagelsmann when they hosted Euro 2024, maybe unlucky against Spain with that Cucurella handball, but they looked shaky following that, as the loss of Toni Kroos cannot be understated. I mean, just ask Real Madrid. But they also lost the leadership of Gundogan and Müller, too, who also retired. But they, of course, have tons of talent to go around, such as the dynamic duo of Musiala and Wirtz in the attack, who both shone brightly at Euro 2024. They are coming off of difficult seasons for different reasons. Sané, he splits opinion, but he's another option, as is Voltemade, either on the wing or as a backup to Havertz in the striker position, or as a central midfielder if you are Eddie Howe. The midfield, pretty damn solid. Defense, maybe some concerns, and the return of Manuel Neuer seems to be somewhat out of necessity, but I don't think that they will be too worried about the group stage. Well, maybe they should be, considering how 2018 and 2022 went. However, the predictor seems to say that Germany are the overwhelming favorites to advance. They say just a 1.4% chance that Germany fails to advance from the group stage. So let's see. Then it's neck and neck between Ivory Coast and Ecuador, just 1.2% between them. Curaçao, the Blue Wave, 7.5% chance to advance. Not overwhelming odds for them, unfortunately. Okay, Group F, the final group for this video. What a long one this has been, but what a fun group. this will be Japan, Netherlands, Sweden, and Tunisia. Tunisia actually hold the honor of being the first African side to ever win a World Cup match. That happened back in 1978. They also beat France in Qatar, but they have never made it out of the group stage in six attempts. Maybe now is their time. Also, for how flawless their qualifying campaign was, with 9 wins and 1 draw, scoring 22 goals and conceding 0 goals, their performances at recent AFCONs has been suspect. Out in the bottom of their group in 2023, eliminated by Mali in 2025 via a shootout when Mali was down a man from the 25th minute onward, Tunisia will once again prioritize having a compact, difficult defense to play against while trying to transition quickly. This is what they did against Brazil, frustrating them with a 1-1 draw recently in a friendly. El Yaskiri is the heart of this team in the midfield, breaking up play, cycling possession quickly, but around him he has PSG's Khalil Ayari to provide creativity and Hannibal Nejbri. Sweden and Tunisia will be sort of eyeing each other up as their main opportunities to win some points in this group, as Sweden took the long way to qualify. Now, you wouldn't know it based on recent performances perhaps, but Sweden have actually a rich history at the World Cup. They were runners-up in 1958 when they hosted the tournament, and they finished third in 1950 and 1994. Now, Sweden had an utterly horrendous qualification campaign, finishing dead last in their group behind Slovenia, Kosovo, and Switzerland, and they didn't even get a single win. But they advanced to the playoffs via the Nations League. Gotta take that Nations League seriously. And with Graham Potter taking over and organizing them a bit better, Sweden's performances took a quantum leap. Gyökeres had a hat trick against Ukraine, an 88th minute winner against Poland in the next match to seal qualification and change the outlook on Sweden a little bit. Now you're suddenly looking at where they do have talent and forgetting how shockingly poor they were in that qualification cycle. Next to Gyökeres is Isak, who has returned from that terrible injury he sustained and looked pretty good in flashes in these pre-tournament friendlies. Great goal against Norway. The defense is where Sweden's issues could lay, assuming their attack doesn't run dry as it did in their qualifying group. A fellow UEFA side that had no real difficulties in qualifying, the Netherlands will be expected to go relatively deep in this tournament. They went unbeaten in qualifying with 6 wins and 2 draws, 27 goals scored, 4 conceded. That is pretty convincing from Koeman and the fellas. Now, the Dutch have Van Dijk, the longest serving captain in Dutch history by appearances, taking control of the back line. Not the greatest season from him, showed he is human, but he has the likes of Van de Ven and Jurrien Timber next to him, whether playing in a back three or a back four. Koeman has often opted for the former. In the midfield, they have some nice options. De Jong, Gravenberch, Reinders, that's a tasty combo. Similarly to Van Dijk, his Liverpool teammate Cody Gakpo didn't have a great season, but he still performed well for the Netherlands, as he often does, creating chances and acting as a goal threat, especially in these big tournaments, I feel. Speaking of goal threats, Memphis Depay has been brought along, and Ruud van Nistelrooy has joined the coaching staff as a specialist finishing and attacking assistant coach. Goals will be one of the biggest issues for the Dutch, as they tend to defend fairly well under Koeman. Their match against Japan is what many are looking forward to. I know I am, as the Samurai Blue have become the second team of many, many people. They absolutely burned through their qualifying campaign, scoring 54 goals across 16 matches, keeping 13 clean sheets, and they became the first Asian side to clinch qualification. They beat Brazil in a friendly last November, 3-2, after going 2-0 down. They beat England in March at Wembley, not to mention they beat Germany and Spain at the World Cup in 2022. This is a very, very capable team, capable of getting big results. Hajime Moriyasu has evolved Japan's tactics from a disciplined, low-block team to a more proactive, attacking side, utilizing the great talents he has at his disposal. Almost the entirety of the team is now made up of players who compete in Europe's top 5 leagues, or top 6. Minamino and Mitoma are big injuries that cannot be ignored. Of course, that takes away from the side, but the system Moriyasu employs still allows others to thrive. Ritsu Duan has an example who you will see cutting inside from the wing given his great technical ability, and he has a great strike on him as well. Ueda of Feyenoord comes into this tournament after scoring tons of goals, I believe 25 and 31 Eredivisie matches. Takefusa Kubo, silky smooth on the ball. Daichi Kamada had a great season in a deeper role at Palace. There's still plenty of talent here. And for that reason, the predictor sees Japan's chances of advancing at 73.5%, just ahead of Sweden, as you can see, and behind the Netherlands, overwhelmingly positive probability of 92%. Tunisia hanging in there at 32.6%. So guys, what a journey, and we are only halfway through all of the teams at this tournament. There really is a lot of teams at this World Cup, my God. All right, you know the drill. If you are new and you're looking for tons of World Cup content, then go ahead and subscribe for more, including daily videos once the World Cup gets up and running. Other than that, I will see you soon.